This is episode number 583 with Revolve co-founder Michael Mente.
Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin.
Welcome back, everyone, to another edition of the School of Greatness podcast. We are starting out powerfully in the new year, and I am just so pumped to be here with all of you. You know, again, as I reflect back on how amazing the last year was and really where we're headed to with this podcast, almost 5 years of the podcast happening, and it just blows my mind to reflect on what we've been building together and the movement of greatness that we're all on board with. So thank you all for, again, being a part of this journey. We've got another powerful interview today. His name is Michael Mente, and he is the CEO and co-founder of Revolve, which is a popular online fashion retailer that's become one of the leading trendy fashion brands today. And here's what I love about it. Revolve was founded in 2003. So in a world where everyone wants to start and launch something quickly and have it sell and make millions of dollars in the first year or first few months, they've been around for a long time. Pre-social media, they've had to learn and constantly reinvent and re-evolve their brand and their audience and so many different strategies to continue to grow. Again, they're getting close to $1 billion in sales a year right now. And it's just continues to grow and grow and grow, right? And they have almost 2 million Instagram followers. They've got millions of email subscribers. They've got a large following. But one of their keys has been getting the biggest celebrities and influencers to feature their clothes and come to their big events and parties. And they are the brand and the event to go hang out at Coachella and other big events that are happening around the world. And I love the strategy behind what they do to find these partnerships with influencers and celebrities and get people to come to their events, which helps their overall brand and overall sales, which we're going to be talking about today. Is first, how to build trust with your audience when you're a pioneer in your industry. How do we build that trust? Also, how to decide what and when to scale in your business. The best ways to build relationships with influencers. So how do you get these influencers to really get excited about your brand when you're just starting out? We cover that. Also, how to deal with massive competition in your industry. The online fashion space is constantly becoming more and more competitive with every influencer now having their own brand. So how do you compete with that? Also, why balance is as necessary as work ethic in order to succeed. And again, as someone who's been grinding it out and hustling for over 15 years now, we talk about really why balance is something that's important to Michael. Before we dive in, I want to give a shout out to the fan of the week. This is from Alec Maggio, who says, "I think I'm addicted." And he left a review over on iTunes. And Alec said, "Wow, I just found this podcast a week and a half ago, and it's all I've been listening to since. I really feel like a changed man. Inspirational, compelling, motivational, and so much more. You have shown me a completely new world of ideas. Thank you so much for what you do. I now can't wait to see what life has in store. This podcast is what makes me get out of bed in the mornings. Thank you." Well, Alec, thank you for being the fan of the week, and thanks for being a big supporter now, even though you just got in tune with us a week and a half ago. If you guys want a chance to get shouted out on the podcast, make sure to go to iTunes and leave a review, or you can go on your podcast app right now on your iPhone and leave a review in iTunes right there. And we pick winners every single week to give shout outs. As well, if you think you know someone in your life who could use this inspiration, this information, these tools, these strategies to help improve your life, improve your business, improve your health, your relationships, every aspect of your life, we're looking to take to the next level. That's what the movement of the School of Greatness is. How do we improve our lives on every area so we create maximum impact, maximum fulfillment, and maximum income? in the process. So don't forget about that as well. I'm very excited, guys. We've got so many good things happening this year. All right, guys, I'm pumped for this episode right now. It's lewishouse.com/583. Go ahead and take a screenshot and tag me on Instagram as you're listening to this. We've also got the full show notes and full video interview back at that link there, lewishouse.com/583. Without further ado, this is all about building a billion-dollar brand, scaling it up, and the art of influencer partnerships with Revolve co-founder and CEO, Michael Mente.
We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card, you call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone if you only had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Canva presents unexplained appearances. It was an ordinary workday until...
That presentation appeared out of thin air.
Also, it's eerily on brand.
Wait, did that agenda just write itself?
Words appear, making this unexplainable case...
Unexplainable? It's Canva's AI tools.
I can generate slides and words in seconds.
Really? The real mystery is why I'm only learning this now.
Canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome back, everyone, to the School of Greatness podcast. We have Michael Mente in the house, man.
Good to see you.
Super glad you're here. We got connected earlier this year. Someone mentioned me about you. I didn't know who you were until someone brought up your name. And then as I started digging in deeper, learning about you being one of the founders of Revolve, this fashion brand that's been around for 15 years now.
Almost 15 years, crazy enough.
Has now blown up. It seems like every big celebrity influencer on Instagram promotes you guys, is at some event. It doesn't matter who it is. It's like everyone is promoting you in the female fashion space. We were talking earlier, you're gearing up close to hitting almost a billion in gross sales, total gross sales for the brand, which is impressive, man.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And thanks for having me. Such an honor to be here.
Of course, man.
Yeah. Learned so much from you from the podcast and books. So it's such a privilege to be here. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And you started, I think you said, back in 2003.
Yes.
Pre-social media, pre-Google.
Yes.
Right? Or maybe Google was around, but
they were around, and they were a little smaller than Yahoo at the time. Yes. Yahoo was still actually how we learned. That was the first digital marketing we ever did was Yahoo, and that kind of put us on the map.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
You're promoting on Yahoo, and so much has evolved in terms of like marketing
Definitely.
In the last 10, 12, 15 years, right?
Definitely.
When social media came around, early on, I remember it was Twitter was a big thing. Were you even using Twitter to promote, or was it not even an effective platform for you guys? Because yours is more of a visual, seeing the clothes.
Exactly.
Right?
For Twitter, that was one thing that like, I know so many people use it as a great tool, but I can never crack it. We can never figure it out because it just wasn't visual enough.
Right.
So honestly, we missed the boat when it was the sweet spot of Facebook days. Like we really were great in the Google days, but we didn't really quite get Facebook right. But then when Instagram came out, that was something that, you know, where a lot of the things we were trying to do were really able to be leveraged in Instagram in that kind of like 2010 and beyond era. But there was definitely so many different phases of having to, you know, evolve and get better and stay current.
Would you say a lot of your sales, gross sales, come from Instagram right now? Or is it pretty diverse?
I think it's really diverse. And I think ultimately all of the channels kind of interact where it's like, someone may see something on Instagram, but then go on, you know, Google to search for it. Or someone may, you know, Google something, but then ultimately see an ad elsewhere. We're really known for Instagram at the moment because I think, you know, a lot of the strategy is a little bit more ahead of the curve and a little bit more pioneering. We're doing a couple of different things or a strategy that other people are, you know, learning from. But that's just one layer. And then there's you know, many other layers that have to be built. So it's just a stack. And I think that's the thing. It's not just Instagram, boom, it's all good. It's like there's the, you know, the fundamentals of Google, which we did, you know, back in the day, and it's still huge. I think Google's still a massive part of our budget. And then, of course, Facebook, Instagram, email, everything.
Email is probably where you get the direct results from. You know, when you send something out, you can see sales coming in, obviously. What made you early on, you know, in 2003, say, I want to get into women's clothes?
You know what's funny? It was purely analytical. And like in those, it was purely analytical. And in those days, a real good friend who's you know, still a business partner of ours kind of showed us, you know, what the company he was working at, where you can, you know, can actually see results of how many people were searching for what terms.
Right.
And then you could also see really transparently how much it would cost to be listed on Yahoo, you know, first or second or third. So there's this awesome transparency where we can see people are searching for this. When you do the
women's fashion or shirts or skirts
brand,
or whatever.
Yeah. And then you see the results and they're like, sometimes there'll be results where like none of the results are selling the products. So we kind of like stumbled upon it and we realized that fashion, there was a lot of people searching for fashion brands, but the fashion world was a little bit, you know, slower to come, you know, slower to adopt technology.
They were doing retail, they weren't doing online.
Exactly.
So they were just expecting you to come into stores or whatever, or
print ads. Yeah. So it was a different world. So there was like an opportunity there.
Wow.
We tried a lot of different things and we were like, okay. A lot of quick failures, of course, in the early days. We thought, this brand's going to be big. This is going to be whatever. And it was like nothing, crickets. But then we came across, again, by chance, that designer denim ended up being like very important at that time. And that was also something where people were just hearing about it, younger consumer, and it was hard to find in physical stores or very limited supply in physical stores. And they had to go online, and that's kind
of where
they're.
The premium denim.
Yeah.
Wow. And so you saw it as an opportunity more than anything. You weren't necessarily passionate about female underwear, right? You weren't like...
Hey, in different ways, not selling
exactly,
it.
Exactly. But you weren't like trying to say, I want to become like the new Victoria's Secret.
Yeah.
You were just like, here's an opportunity that people are missing out on. This whole internet thing is taking off. There's a big opportunity and these brands are missing out on it. But at the beginning, you didn't create your own brands, whereas now you have 12 different brands.
Yeah, like, I think 13 now.
13
it's crazy.
Now. But then you were just, was it you were buying it wholesale and then selling it online? Were you drop shipping? Were you?
Yeah, exactly. It was buying wholesale, storing it in the house,
really?
And then shipping it to the consumer. And I think we were very lucky again that you know, we were in the area in Los Angeles and all the showrooms, you know, 90% of the brands we carry have showrooms in Los Angeles. So that was another, you know, aspect of luck that we stumbled upon kind of that access and did a lot of homework there.
So you could find people, get them at a really cheap wholesale rate. They would trust you guys and build a relationship and...
It was a lot of trust building. A lot of people were like, what the heck are you doing? Like, this is weird.
No one was doing that.
No, like, yeah, very, very few. Like, some of the department stores, you know, had kind of early websites that were kind of experimental, not necessarily as serious. So they existed. Not much. There was literally a lot of brands with, like, you know, next to nothing. Or the competitors were there, were like still quite young. They may have been like 1 or 2 years old as well. So it was kind of like early, early days.
Which kind of like Zappos was for shoes.
Exactly. You know, Zappos was our model. There was like something that like we did the same exact things at the same time, kind of just by observing the marketplace, and we kind of weren't aware of them. But then, of course, we start to see them blow up and become something, and we had to evolve to something else.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. Did you guys launch the same year, or were they before you guys?
They may have launched maybe a year before us or so. I mean, kind of the same period.
Yeah. Didn't Amazon buy them?
Yes. The Amazon bought them.
For like $1 billion or something?
I think maybe a little, about $1 billion and change. And that was probably right around recession time.
2009 or something?
Yeah, I think around then. Yeah. I think I remember something about their VCs sending out a letter where everyone had to like,
they,
you know, buckle
it
down.
They needed to sell it.
Exactly.
Because how much were they doing in sales? Do you remember a year?
I don't remember, actually. I don't remember what the multiple and what was going on then.
I wonder if they were reaching $1 billion in sales. You don't think they were?
It depends on the measurement.
But the revenue is...
I think I remember reading the book. And I don't remember the exact year, but they did. I think they did hit $1 billion in gross sales prior to the acquisition.
Right, right. Okay. Interesting. What were you doing before all of this? Weren't you in a software business or something?
Yeah. You know, before I was lucky enough to be, you know, in college during that first dot-com boom, but not lucky enough to like be out in the workforce long enough to really capitalize. So I worked at a software startup and that's where I met my business partner. The best thing that was about that whole experience, I met my business partner. This was, you know, 2000, 2001. And it was a random software startup.
Right out of college.
Right out of college.
And you went to school for... as an engineer, or what did you go to school
for? That's funny. I went to school to specifically to USC because they have a great entrepreneurship program. Yeah. But the funny thing is I left a year early to pursue startup work. So I never actually did the entrepreneur program. So it was actually a finance background, okay. A finance major.
Cool.
And the cool thing is that now my business partner manages all the finances, and so it's ironic.
Amazing. So you guys met at the software company. The company didn't work out, or you just were like, let's try something else?
Yeah, it was just like 99% of the other startups of that day that were just a lot of capital flying around and a lot of startups. And conceptually, I still think that it was software systems to help manage enterprise strategy. And I think, we still do it a little old school where it's like, PowerPoint and Excel.
Yeah.
And the idea of making it a little bit smoother and easier and simplified, but also with depths of data integrated. I like the concept still, but also the methodology and things. There's a lot of challenges there. And it was also that time where selling software to corporate America was very exciting in the 90s.
Sure, sure.
There's a lot of big companies doing awesome things. And then now, post-internet era, that kind of model is a little bit different.
Right.
Right.
Did you always know you wanted to be an entrepreneur or start your own business growing up? Or was this something through the years that you kind of developed?
I think there was always something there. And I think it was not necessarily an entrepreneur. I think for me, the criteria was very clear is that I wanted to be in a field where I could put as much as I can into it and get as much as I can out of it. And there was not necessarily time limitations or educational limitations or this very structured path where I can just go all in, assume some risk, which I guess is, very entrepreneurial. But, I thought that potentially could have happened in other paths. Like an engineer or something like that. That was, a debating, becoming a programmer and working in the world from that side of things. But ended up going straight to pure entrepreneurialism, out the gates.
What would you say is the biggest inspiration for you guys right now? Is there a brand or a person that inspires you from what they're doing?
That's a tough one. I think all my examples maybe are a little bit cliche, but super amazing, man. Like Jeff Bezos is incredible. The way he started his business and the way through the different, changes of the world and the different opportunities, he's been able to grow and build and adapt as the world changes, sees opportunities, big opportunities and pursues them, but still has an extremely long-term, very, very ambitious goal. I think that's probably a lot of inspiration for a lot of people, but definitely someone that we look up to very much.
Sure, sure. What about Wexner? That's Wexner from Limited Brands. Is that a guy that you're aware of?
Not super. I think
he started Victoria's Secret too, I think.
Yes. I think those guys, and also Ortega at Zara, top five richest people in the world making clothes. It's
crazy,
incredible.
Huh?
It's incredible.
Is he from Spain? Is that where that is?
Spain, yes.
And that's the top five richest?
I think so. And the coolest thing to me is that...
For Zara, huh?
Yeah. I think they actually have multiple chains, but I think Zara is the biggest one. I don't know, a lot of things on a personal level, we look up to him in the sense that does zero press, super low key. And I think that my partner and I would like to do that. I don't know if you can do that in this world anymore where people where the consumer really wants to know the big corporate anonymity. Yeah. So I think, it's a different world or else but that's something that we respect about him and the obviously the massive business that he's built there.
Right.
So
what would you say is one of the biggest risks that you've taken that paid off and the one that hurt you the most? You've been doing this for 15 years now.
I think the biggest risk was really, when we first started, because we started with just our own capital and we were, 2 years out of college. So whatever we can save out of for 2 years was like, all right, this is what we got. Let's figure something out.
Let's buy some clothes and promote it.
Exactly. Yeah. So we probably, it doesn't sound massive, but for us, it was like the biggest bet we ever made. But to launch the website and have our first tester selection was probably about, I think it was $16,000 specifically. And that was like, all right, let's buy $16,000 worth of clothes, see how this goes. Worst case, I don't know what we're going to do. Maybe we'll recover half of it on eBay or something weird like that. And they start selling one by one somewhere or whatever. But that was kind of like that big leap of faith where it was like the minimum amount of investment we can make, but still have a big enough test where we can see if this worked. So that was probably the biggest risk that paid off.
And what happened when you guys launched it with those $16,000 worth of
units? It's funny, the first few brands that we thought were going to be awesome didn't work. And one of the second, second tier brands, which was a little bit less, significantly less known, worked for us. It was there was the big denim brands, and this was a second tier denim brand. And celebrities were wearing them. It was a little bit more culty. And that worked for us. Then we started buying more and more and more. And then, because, you know, those guys were actually the only ones who would sell to us. The big brands at the time wouldn't sell to us. So we're like, we're going to go to your competitors and see who would be interested. And then someone believed in us or someone needed that support and needed to sell.
We'll sell some clothes.
Yes, yeah, you have money, we'll take it. And it worked. And that was, you know, really, you know, what got that initial momentum. It wasn't out the gates, but it was probably like 5-6 weeks in, we're like, okay, we got something now. After it was,
When did you realize that you actually had a business that could continue to take off? Was it right in that moment? Was it year two and three when after like testing a bunch of stuff, we're like, oh, we have a brand that did like $1 million in sales and now we can keep growing?
It was early, but also maybe never in the sense that,
really?
like
still today.
Still today. To some degree, because we've been through some challenges, some interesting times where like in the early days, it was like, we started to sell some stuff. We started to see some consistent business. So and the first standard was, I think this can support both of us living.
Right.
That was where we can like continue to work and we don't have to get jobs. And I think that was probably in, you know, the first 3 to 6 months or so.
We're
like, you know, we were still like, we were still probably like collecting unemployment checks, just trying to figure things out that point. So I think fairly, you know, early on,
we're making a few thousand a month. Like
it covers the bills. We can eat. Yeah. We can, you know, we can pay the rent. And then, so that was kind of like the first level. But of course, there was still, you know, it's still very fragile. But then the company continued to grow. But then 2008, we almost went out of business.
Because of the recession.
Really? Yeah, like really, like within a 2 week period, sales dropped by 40%. And we had no financial backers. It was just us. And the whole kind of industry just kind of like massive slowdown. You know, all of the, you know, department stores, everyone just discounted the whole stores at 50% off. And it was just a really crazy time. So even though at that point we were doing maybe $40 to $50 million, we were still like fighting for our lives, you know, and we had no financial backers. And of course, that's when all the banks in those scary times, that's when all the money goes away. And so that was a challenging time too. So I think we always still have this little bit of edge of like, 07, we thought, whoa, we're really ahead. And then 08, we're fighting for our lives. And I think now we still have that scar and that fear, like, you know, like that, you know, that recession survivor mentality where it's like, got to be very protective, you know, who knows what's going to happen. There's always elements of risk. So we're always on our toes.
But I think 10 years though,
it's been
10 years from there, but you're still like, okay, let's make sure we have money for a rainy day or for whatever, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
And then did you take on investors at some point?
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. So listen, we all know life is full of yada yada, like those quote unquote free trials that somehow still charge your card for something, or when companies have those sneaky gotchas hiding deep in the fine print. And I know you've dealt with yada yada before, like those bills that keep going up and up for no reason at all, or when budget airlines promise a cheap fare but then charge you for every little thing until you realize you're paying more than you would have somewhere else. And yes, it is possible to outsmart yada yada, like triple checking airline deals to make sure all you need is already included, but you don't take yada yada in life, so don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Metro by T-Mobile has no contracts, no credit checks, no surprises, and nada yada yada. Stop by one of over 6,000 Metro stores nationwide.
Canva presents unexplained appearances. It was an ordinary workday until
that presentation appeared out of thin air.
Also, it's eerily on brand.
Wait, did that agenda just write itself?
Words appear, making this unexplainable case
unexplainable? It's Canva's AI tools.
I can generate slides and words in seconds.
Really? The real mystery is why I'm only learning this now.
Canva.com, designed for work.
Around 9 years into the business, we took on investors. And I think that was actually one thing that a risk that we did not take that ended up being really good for us. And that from the founding to the recession, we met a lot of investors and we saw a lot of interesting things, but like we just didn't feel like we can be partners with somebody, you know? It felt like, you know, it was exciting to be like, here's a, you're 25 and here's like a $20 million check. And I think that took a lot of like discipline on our part to be like, no, we don't really want your money. We don't want to be partners with you. We like what we have and we're going to protect what we have because you're going to have a different vision and values than we're going to have. And I think that was, you know, super important. But in 2012, we'll take the meetings from time to time and we turned down, you know, a lot of different things, but we really felt we found someone who really understood what we were trying to do in a nuanced way. It was like a lot of the money in the times past. And I think this mistake has happened to, you know, other entrepreneurs in the fashion space when a lot of technology investors try to build it and scale it like a technology company, but really more of a consumer brand company. And I found the right investors who really, we felt that understood that. And it's been great since then.
Really?
That was about, yeah, it'll be 5 years ago in like, five on the dot in like 10 days.
Wow.
It's been a good relationship.
Amazing. And are you able to share how much you raised? Is that public? Or
no? That's public, yes. Yeah. It was $40
million. $40 million from one investor or venture
one
capital fund?
One private equity firm.
Gotcha.
And it's like a little bit blended and blurred. And there was like, a portion of it went, you know, to the business, and then a portion of it went to, you know, my partner and I.
Uh-huh.
And I think that there's a number of different things where it all made sense, where after the recession, we were scared, very, very conservative, and we were, you know, leaving money on the table. We weren't scared to just keep putting all the money back into the business as we did for the previous 9 years.
Yeah, you're,
because
yeah.
There's no cushion. So this was the perfect situation where we can build a little bit on the side, you know, personally, where we could be a lot more aggressive with the business again. And I think that mentality really, really changed the business because since then, our growth has accelerated. Since then, you know, the business has, in the past 5 years, the business has probably, you know, between four or five times the size. So it's been like super beneficial for both of us. And it wasn't necessarily that money into the business, which of course helps. But, you know, that's, you know, no doubt was an important part, but it was really of the mindset of like, be aggressive again and pursue it. The opportunity's there. It's a great time to pursue things.
Do you believe that it's really challenging for a company to grow past a certain point without infusing an investment of ad and media spending? Do you think it's going to be really hard unless you're investing back into the promotional side of things?
I guess it depends on...
And bringing on more people?
Yes.
Or can you grow with, you know, the same, a small group and continue to 2-4x every year?
I guess it depends on how fast that growth is and like what type of the business it is.
True,
you know
true.
What I mean? Like for us dealing with physical products, like certain aspects have to grow. Like there's this portion of the business that has to grow as like the revenue grows, where just like things like customer service, picking and packing, things like that. But then there's also other organizations that don't have to grow as much. Like this team is awesome. The company can be 3-4 times as big and this team can grow 10% because they're built, they're amazing, they work together well.
Systems, processes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think it really does, you know, vary, but also depending on the business, we really see that, you know, back into marketing. I guess it depends on the kind of marketing plans where it's like, if there is a good plan, I feel like we have a good plan. We're in invest mode where we think we have something that works, but there's been periods in times past where there wasn't extra opportunity to invest the money. So we had to be a little bit more patient where certain channels for us, like say, a lot of the digital channels, like we have to be disciplined because if you want to put more money to work, it gets way less efficient. So it's like we're calibrated at a good level, but our brand spend, we feel actually the more you spend, it actually gets easier and there's definitely some scalability for it.
Really?
So there's these two aspects of marketing that operate, they work together, but they have like kind of different principles and different approaches and we have to separate the two.
And when you mean the brand spend, you mean more of like the influencer events and things
influencer
like that?
Influencer events and kind of like
brand recognition.
Media and things like that versus like the digital side where it's like a little bit more functional where it's like the Google and the Facebook and like the, you know.
Now this is something I think you guys do really well is you've figured out a way to like curate all these top influencers, whether it be from Instagram or YouTube or just social media influencers and celebrities in general. And you do these really high-end curated events for them, right?
Definitely.
Where you'll go to different destinations, you'll create content for them, you'll give them clothes, create content, bring them together, you create a unique experience. I feel like that's one of the things that I learned about you guys early on is something you did because I saw your guys' brand everywhere promoted by these influencers. Now, what's the process for that? Or how much are you allowed to share that of what you guys do there? And why are they effective? And do you think more people should be really tapping into influencers in general for their brand?
Yeah, definitely. This is an exciting part of the business. And I think a part that I spend a lot of time. But for us, the interesting thing is that like it has been very organic and very long-term, where we first started working with influencers, you know, in 2009, I believe.
Really?
And that was before they were called influencers. So it's kind of like, it was like they were all bloggers at the time. And like everyone, and that was a platform. You have to literally create your own platform to communicate with the world. And that was like before, you know, Facebook was really core and before Instagram was so visual. So that was something that we've been developing and nurturing and evolving for many, many years. The world has continued to evolve. And as you know, of course, we're staying very focused on how things go. So our previous experience and, you know, relationship with influencers, experimenting with blogs and such, really made a lot more sense with the rise of Instagram. So that created a good platform and centralized platform for, you know, all of our consumers as well, of like all of the influencers to be. And as that's continued to get bigger and bigger and bigger, it's been more and more powerful. We've done some stuff where, it's funny, you know, actually after this, I'm going to go to a meeting to think about, you know, collaborations with influencers. And the ideas are actually ideas that we tried 4 or 5 years ago and weren't as powerful, but we were a little bit ahead of the curve then. So it's been a long time spent. But I think the one thing, you know, for us that's been really key is that it has to just really be authentic and organic. I think if it was a situation where you could spend money and receive the returns,
right,
the big guy would always win. You know, the corporate guys would just be throwing money everywhere and it would work. But I think, like, you know, for it to work, I think it really has to be genuine and authentic and
unique and creative. Yeah.
Exactly. Like the influencer really, in my opinion, really has to be a fan of the brand for it to really work versus attempt to sell something that they don't necessarily
care about.
Yeah. So I think that was super important.
Yeah. When did you realize, like, wow, this event was a massive success?
You know,
like celebrity influencer.
It's been so gradual. I think that's the benefit. And I think that's also our mentality of like, test it a little bit, invest, you know, as minimum as possible, but enough to get a proper test and then try to scale it up. We're never too aggressive up front. So I think, you know, a good example of this is actually yesterday the team was out in Palm Springs prepping for Coachella. And I think we're starting to get known for the biggest party at Coachella. And I think last year was incredible. I think we had massive parties, super fun, thousands of people. I think it was kind of like a rival to the actual festival, kind of unintentionally. So that was, you know, and the thing was like, it was, you know, we had thousands and thousands of people. It was completely free for everyone. And afterwards, like, maybe we should have charged people. But the funny thing is, it was a very humble beginning where the first Coachella event that we have wasn't really an event. I think it was, I believe it was 2010. And it was with just two friends who were influencers who are still good friends to this day. We all just went and rented a house, just like friends, like everyone does. And it really started to make a little bit of sense of like, we can make this not just fun. I think next year we can make it a business marketing opportunity. So they went from two influencers, you know, my good friends, you know, Ami and Julie, who were actually going on a trip together in, I guess only in 10 days. But then the next time we did it a little bit bigger, you know, half a dozen people.
Yeah, exactly.
And then last year, I think there was, between the people that we hosted and people coming, I think it was several, I mean, close to 500 or so, something crazy like that.
Influencers?
Yes. So it's just crazy.
Holy cow. 500 influencers will come to an event.
I think the key is just try to deliver something that like we would want to go to. So we had you know, a mini festival. So we had like Rick Ross perform and Migos perform and, you know, Ray Schremer and, you know, actually Drake ended up coming and Leo was there and Kendall was there, Kendall Jenner. And like, you know, it was just like, we got to host people, show them an authentically good time that we would want to come to. Like, that's kind of the goal. Like, would we line up to go to this party? If we aren't here, are we going to be, you know, FOMO?
Right.
And I think that's kind of like the standard. And I think and ultimately really being in the eyes of delivering something to them. And I think ultimately it comes back.
Of course. Yeah. So tell me the model of like a trip you're going to be doing. Like, you're going on a trip soon. How does that model work? How many influencers will go? What do you provide for them? Is it more about like just having a good trip and experience to some exotic location where you've got video and photographers taking great content for them that they can use? And if they're wearing the clothes, great. Kind of how does the whole thing work? How much would it cost?
See, I think we've developed a way where, you know, our methodology is like we can do it on different scales. So over the course of the last year, the smaller, you know, probably the smallest one may have been maybe like 5 or 6. The biggest one will be a month in the Hamptons with like maybe 70, like, you know, every weekend for 4 weeks we'll do, and there'll be maybe 12 influencers per weekend. We've developed a way where it's scalable, where we don't have to do a month long thing, where we can do a 3 or 4 day, you know, event.
Sure,
so
sure.
I think that's also the benefit of we've been able to, you know, figure out the nuances of that. And each time is, you know, there's core principles, but then there's a lot of things that are completely different. Mm-hmm. But I think the core.
Some people you're paying, other people they're getting just like swag, and they're getting their trip paid for, and it depends on kind of like the level of person it is.
It's a total range. It really depends on the people. Where the people that we work with will be literally the biggest fashion influencer on the planet, or you know, sometimes you know on one of the trips it'll be like someone who's been working with us for many, many years is, you know, literally like 0.01% of that person, but still is just
up and coming, in a good little community.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's a whole range of people. So it's, you know, entire spectrum. But really, it's just like, for us, it's so cool in that, like, the concept of just like living your best life, it's also this combination of what do we think is awesome? Because it's probably going to be relevant to them, and it's going to be relevant to our consumer. Mistake we always used to do was like, what would other companies do? And then when we looked in the mirror, like, what do we really want to do? And we started like, oh, maybe we should, you know, go here and do that. Or like, you know, maybe we should go to Croatia for the summer and do this. And we're like, okay, let's try it out.
Yeah,
we built on some successes and it worked awesome. So now we're like, okay, what else do we want to do? And I think it is like the combination of really showing people a genuinely good time. I think that when you see the photos, there's just a sense of fun, and like people are really enjoying themselves. And I believe it's because people really are enjoying themselves. That really shows. The visual imagery, of course, is an important part of it. It wouldn't be as exciting mixing in with just like us at, you know,
sure,
Shake Shack or whatever, but you know, having like a very beautiful kind of aspirational but still accessible kind of lifestyle that's genuinely fun. And I think ultimately, like the way I look back to, and of course, I think this is different for everyone's brand, but I think what we sell is like a premium aspirational product that's still accessible, something that you aspire towards and you crave, but also something that's still inclusive that a large portion of the market can really afford. And this type of product is meant for being social in the sense that, you know, we sell all apparel categories, but really it's like that feeling you get when you put, as a dude, like whether it's hanging out with your friends or going out to like a party or like you're going to like a really business event, you put on your nice shirt or jacket and then
you just
feel good. Or you're even just going to the gym, you're like, you got your nice gym clothes, you're like, I'm ready to work.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's the kind of feeling of fun and socializing that we try to capture with kind of just our broad marketing. That's what our brand is about.
It's great. It's great. Now, if you're, there's a lot of entrepreneurs that do listen. And for those that haven't tapped into influencer marketing or celebrity marketing yet, but they want to tap into it. Maybe they don't have these massive budgets, but they've got a little bit of money to spend. And they may be in fashion or some other type of business. Doesn't matter. Any type of brand. How would you suggest is a good way to start approaching influencers and celebrities in order to get them to promote their brand or be a part of their brand? You know, is it through, because I get sent swag all the time and I'm like, I just throw it away. So what's the creative way that you think works for you guys that any brand, small or big, could use as like reaching out to potential influencers?
You know, I think like that.
And building those relationships, because you've done an amazing job at keeping the relationships too, right? Sustaining those relationships.
I think that's a big part of it. That's an important part.
Yeah.
But like, in this day and age, it's easy to actually contact them, whether you're like DM or LinkedIn or you know, whatever research
Twitter,
you can do.
Whatever,
so it's easy to like establish that. But I think it's like, one, there's a whole range of influencers from like, you know, super mega to like, you know, micro and local. Mm-hmm. They are powerful in their own ways. So I think it's first finding the influencers that truly resonate with the brand, you know, understanding what, you know, your brand is about, and then finding the people that really represent that. I think that, you know, it has to be real. It's not just bigger the better, like, you know, that more numbers the better. Of course, that's relevant. But at the same time, we all have budgets and we can't just work with the biggest and best. There's plenty of people that I would love to work with that I just feel like it would be, you know, financially irresponsible to do so. So I think finding the influencers.
Like Kim Kardashian might be like way too much for
exactly.
a post, right?
Yeah, and it's like you can do it. It's possible. I'm sure like a lot of us can do it. But is it going to make sense? Does she really represent the brand in that right way?
Right.
Maybe there makes sense for some brands where she, you know, her personal brand is in complete alignment with, you know, the brand. But I think that has to be there. And then just approaching people as like genuine fans where it's like, you know, people that we work with, we really respect and admire. You know, there's people that we don't work with because they're just not necessarily are, you know, the type of people that we want to work with. But like the people that we really work with are people that we're genuine fans as well. And I think that'll come across as important, that what they're doing mirrors and reflects and is aligned with what we're trying to do, and finding those right people. And I think that sense of like upfrontness of, you know, attempting to work in professionalism with that genuineness of like, I'm really a fan of what you
do.
I think we can do this something awesome together. And also thinking long term, where it's not just one and done. Let's, you know, can you tag me or can we do this? But like, how can we work together in mutually beneficial ways that, you know, and I think that's an important thing that.
What can you offer them?
Yes. And like, that's when, I guess that's like that's the core of business, right? Where it's like, you're building greater than the parts. Like together, you guys are more powerful than you guys are, you know, alone, the influencer and the brand or business partners, whatever. And I think that's something to always keep in mind as well. It's like, how can you support them? And if the brand alignment is there, if, you know, the brand and product or service is aligned with the influencer, then it should be quite clear that both can build together.
Yeah, and I'm making an assumption here. You tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm assuming you can reach out to them and say, hey, we'd love to do, you know, just a free photo shoot or video shoot, lifestyle of like just you and your day. And we're happy to give you some of the clothes, or we can just give you some great photos that you can use. Might be something that you do. I'm not even sure. But
no, totally on that level. Like there's, you know, especially when it's very scrappy and bootstrap days, that's exactly how we'd approach things. Where it's like, we don't, you know, we definitely can't, you know, we don't have this budget. We don't even have a budget, especially when we first experimented. And I think when we did actually start working with influencers, it was zero budget. It was just like, we can't allocate money to, because this is just like, could be completely wasted. So it was like, how do we do it in ways that are effective, that will give us a conviction to put money behind it? And it was done in a very organic, low budget, kind of just like person-to-person connection.
Right.
How can we build together?
But that's cool. And are you reaching out personally to these influencers, or is it other people on your team that are kind of...
At this point now, it's a lot of other people. I think like over the past, you know, I think there's some loose numbers. I think over the past year, we may have worked with, you know, around 5,000. So it's like become a little bit more process and system oriented.
You can't do
now.
That all day yourself.
Exactly. But like a lot of, you know, majority, if not all of the people that we work with that are the most established people and the most powerful people are genuine personal relationships that we've developed over the years. Or it's like, I know, you know, I just ran into someone and I'm friends with her sister. Like we'll like spend time and, you know, do running together or whatever it may be.
Sure, sure.
And we're friends, you know, and have relationships outside. So
that's great. Now, so much has evolved in your business and the industry, where you were just selling other people's clothes for the first however many years to the, you decided to do your own brand, right? You started to hire your own designers in-house, manufacture, you know, create your own brands. Now you have 13, I think you said.
Yes.
What's the challenge been? I guess since like 2012, there's been, it seems like thousands of new brands.
You know? Definitely.
It almost seems like there's 1,000 new brands every year that come out in fashion. Maybe I'm wrong here, but it just seems like tons of new brands, and then every influencer now wants to have their own brand. So how do you deal with that competition? Is that a challenge where maybe some of the influencers you've been working with and sponsoring or helping out now are, assuming some of them have their own legging lines or whatever, their own brands, is that right?
Definitely.
How do you manage that when each influencer is now like, you know what, I'd rather not promote you anymore because I got my own brand? What's that like?
I think it's dynamic, and I think every situation is unique. Like, no doubt, there are so many brands coming out. And it seems like across in the fashion industry, but across everywhere, I feel
like
everything's so much more accessible. You know, becoming manufacturing isn't how challenging it was 20 years ago.
It's really easier to
do. It's a little bit more commodified. So I think levels of playing field, which is amazing in many ways. Why we're able to create our own brand so powerfully is that we have the competitive advantage, is that we have a lot of data. We can see that, oh wow, people are really rapidly clicking on this category and we don't have a good selection here. Let's go make some stuff. So it's not really like what the designer and the human creative is just like, I want to do this. It is data and opportunity, then layered in with someone who can interpret that very well. So that's why we're able to launch these brands.
You're doing the same thing you did in 2003. You're
pretty
finding
much.
What's the data, where's the opportunity, what do people want, and then you're selling them that.
Yes.
And you're just doing
the core principles
now.
You're right. That's it. I actually didn't put that together, but the core principle is, you know, exactly the same. It's
when
like
people wanted premium denim then, you found the right partner, and now you're just like, oh, they want this now, let's go create it.
Exactly. And then now there's a more nuanced version of like, say, with denim, where it's like, people want this specific type of denim, and we knew it, so then we created it, and it's been
great.
But I didn't put that parallel there. But yeah, all we're doing is really just listening to the consumer and trying to understand and give them what they want.
Mm-hmm. Hi, I'm Ben. I suffer from a condition called writer's block. It strikes when I'm at work. That's why I choose Canva Magic Write. It works fast, generating texts in seconds, thanks to AI.
Common side effects include increased productivity, compliments from coworkers, feelings of satisfaction.
Now I can say bye-bye to writer's block.
Ask your boss if Canva Magic Write is right for you at canva.com, designed for work. Canva.
Is this house a good price compared to others in the area? Are prices going up or down? If I don't make an offer right this very moment, will I miss my chance? These are just some of the questions a home buyer might ask. And these are the sorts of questions an agent who is a Realtor can help answer. Because Realtors have the expertise, data, and access to specialty training to help you navigate the process of buying a home. They provide support, guidance, and have your back every step of the way. That's what Realtors do, because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
And what's the biggest challenge for you right now that you face? Is it all the competition? Is it just there's so many brands out there? Is it the influencers are now starting their own thing and they're taking their audience with them? Is it just scaling? What's the challenge for you?
I think the real thing is that hasn't always been the case, but I think that right now we're in a position where in times past, I always would identify, okay, this is a gap that we need to fill. In times past, we weren't always good at influencer marketing. So it was like, we have to figure this out. Before, we had no clue about how to make clothes, so we had to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And now I feel like able to layer this stacks of different competencies. And I think that now the challenge is making sure they all work together and are able to grow and scale at the same time. It's a different type of challenge. And I think that's why I'm still so excited about everything, because now that, as soon as you figure something out, there's a new challenge and there's always opportunity for growth. We're blessed with, a lot of opportunities. So, so really coordinating everyone as a no longer scrappy startup entrepreneur. Now it's more like a little bit more of a larger company CEO kind of responsibilities of management and training and culture and integration, I think. But it's fun because my team is awesome. And I think there's a lot of culture. It's a lot of camaraderie, and there's not a lot of cattiness and infighting and politics. It's like everyone is focused and everyone enjoys working with each other. So it's like kind of like, a high functioning sports team when we're all in it together and rolling. So it's challenging but fun.
That's great. How many employees do you have?
I actually just got a report yesterday. So I think 749.
Amazing. And how have you evolved into, again, being an entrepreneur by yourself to now running an organization with that many employees? What did that take from you?
That's the other benefit is that, the fact that I have been doing this for, 14, 15 years, I have had the luxury of time to grow. It wasn't like overnight the whole role changes or 1 year later the company explodes and I'm in a totally different space. It's been this steady, long journey. So before it was really roll up your sleeves, figure out how to do the process, figure out how to do the work, do a lot of it yourself, and then build the process and get other people to do it and make it, scalable. And then I've had to do that. My partner and I have had to do that in different areas over time, where first it was website design and buying. And then later on, it became more the planning aspect of things and digital marketing. Then later on, it ended up being brand marketing. And later on, it ended up being manufacturing clothes. So for me, building the different aspects and competencies of the organization took a lot of time. And then now I do feel that the team is good. All the positions I need are there. There's a few things that we're layering in. And now it's just like the orchestra of everyone working together, which is chaotic.
Right, exactly. Well, who would you say is the most influential person in your life growing up? Someone who made you who you are today?
Early on, my dad was definitely influential on me in a different way. An Asian kind of household, and it was definitely.
So you grew up in Malaysia, is that right?
I was born in Malaysia, but grew up out over here.
Okay,
and I think in the Asian, at least in the culture that I grew up, it was a little bit more of like stoic mask. It was really not share your emotions. It was really that. So it wasn't really through like communication and kind of like traditional, you know, teaching. But my dad
showing affection and communicating your affection and things like that.
Yeah, and like really like teaching a specific lesson or really. But what he really showed me, hands down, was, you know, hard work. Yeah, it was just work ethic, and that was one thing that I knew was this. It was a responsibility, and I'm, you know, happy to see that role model. It's like times were tough. Well, the only job is in Santa Barbara, so we got to commute to Santa Barbara, right? And then work, and then, oh, during that times are tough, you still have to work on the weekends, to do work on the weekends just to keep level, and you got to do what you got to do. So I think that was like, that really, really resonated. I really internalized that, and I think that till this day, that really, really influenced the person I've grown up to be. And
sure.
I think, you know, actually, I don't know if I've ever told him that. I hope he listens and hears that.
And what about your mom? Biggest lesson she taught you?
I think she really was able to teach me, you know, a lesson, but skill was really listening and really understanding people. And I think it was like, you know, she is the type of person where it's just like, we'll talk a lot, but also is always able to develop a lot of relationships with people in terms of just like having that empathy and understanding where they're coming from and how you can help people out and why people are acting a certain way and how do you build. So I think those two things together are like the blended are kind of the foundation of why am I able to grow and succeed.
Sure. What do you think it's going to have to take from you to still learn in order to take your business to where you want it to be?
What do you mean by that?
What do you still need to learn?
What do I still...
Or what lesson do you need to take on? Or what do you need to let go of within yourself in order for you to take your business to the next level you want it to be at?
Well, I think the one thing that very recently I started to focus on is that work ethic aspect was always there, and it's there, but it's also like balancing that. It's like you can't be like at 10 all the time. And you can't push everyone to be 10 all the time. I don't think it's capable for us to succeed in the next level by just everyone outworking everyone. In the earlier days, it's essential. Like that was like the core competency in the day one. We're like, we're two guys with nothing to do but work all day and all the energy in the world. But now to get to that next level, it can't be just like, you know, our teams are happy, and I don't know if they're happy, but our teams are committed that when it's time to go, it's go time.
Yeah.
And everyone, you know, looks back like, we're going to do this. And there's like a really sense of like, we're doing this together.
Sure.
But I'm trying to now at this point really minimize those times where everyone has to be like buckled down and duke it out and really slug through the challenges. I think now it's really like, what's the elegant, simple way for us to accomplish the goal without burning out the team and challenging everyone and having to push everyone that to succeed just on that sheer willpower? I think it's going to be, how do we succeed and achieve even greater results, but in an elegant, fluid way that's smoother and more enjoyable for all of us? Because if it's not enjoyable, like what's
the point?
What's the point?
I like that. In a world where it seems like every entrepreneur wants to start a company and then sell it within 3 to 5 years, how have you been consistently excited about your business for 15 years? When it seems like you're kind of like an old business now, if you're around for 15 years,
you didn't
sell yet, right?
Definitely.
So how have you stayed, and what's your advice as well? How have you stayed inspired every year? And what's your advice to younger entrepreneurs that are like, oh, I just want to build this and sell it in 3 years?
I don't know. I think it's a number of different things. I think it's really complex. I think one thing for me is that the people on our team through and through, you know, the people I work with directly or the people that I continue to meet in the organization, like there's a culture that resonates and I really enjoy it. Like I can't imagine not working with these people,
you know,
I think that's something there. Also from a business perspective, we've always been fans of the long-term. And I think ultimately when you're focused on the long-term, when you're executing in the present, I think that's when the big magical results can happen. I think that, you know, that was something that my partner and I, you know, from day one, and it's interesting, we were like 22, 23, I was like, let's build a business we want to own forever. When you want to own it forever, if you ever change your mind, it's going to be very valuable versus trying to build a business that you're trying to sell. Well, if the people you're trying to sell to aren't interested or if the world changes, I think honestly, you know, that was influenced by us coming into the workforce and the entrepreneurial kind of like community in the first recession in 2000, 2001. we were in that world where everyone was trying to build this company to sell it to so-and-so or to do so-and-so. And it was really kind of like a short-sighted kind of play. And if you can't, you know, do that and you can't go there, the world changes, then you end up with nothing.
The business collapses.
Exactly.
Yeah, you get burnt out, you're bored, you're whatever.
Yeah. So, you know, or like the potential acquirers end up, you know, which you have no control of, their business may evolve. So with us, we always had that long-term mentality. And I think that's, to this day, I think
I'm smart.
One of the rare ones who says that, like, I think I want to do this forever. I think we're also just so lucky that the opportunities keep coming and coming. And I think, you know, there's a wealth of opportunities that we can pursue. And it's like really our responsibility to stay focused on what we have to do. But I could definitely see myself doing this forever as long as the opportunities for growth are still there.
I like it, man. So what advice would you give to young entrepreneurs who want to start their own thing? What advice would you say to them? Is there any principles you would say? Is it to build something to hold on to forever? Is it that you would want to? What else would you offer advice to?
I think there's so many different ways. And I think there's so many, like, ultimately understanding what you want to do. Because I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with building a business and trying to sell it. You know what I mean? Certain type of businesses and opportunities may be ripe for that. And I think that might be really smart in certain zones. So I think that really aligning what your goals are with kind of what the market opportunity is and making sure that those go together. You know, it could, you know, whether it could be starting like the awesome donut coffee shop that's like really awesome and you're into it, you know, and you delight your customers. Is that like, you know, a success to you, or is it like you have to scale it to be 500 locations? Nothing wrong with either of those, but it's like understanding that and ensuring that the opportunities out there really make sense.
Sure, sure. I like it, man. This is called The Three Truths.
Uh-oh.
We're getting to the final questions here. It's called The Three Truths, and this is, if it's the end of the day for you, many years from now, you've done everything you want to do in your life. You've built the business you want it to be. You've achieved everything. You've made your parents proud for achieving what they want you to do, because I know that's important in the Asian community, right?
Of course.
You've done all those things. But for whatever reason, it's all erased. Everything's gone. And all the interviews you've done, the content you put out there is gone. So people don't have your information, your words anymore. And you got a piece of paper and a pen to write down three things you know to be true. The three lessons you've learned from your life that you would pass on to other people. And this is all they would have to remember you and your information by. What would you say are those three lessons or three truths?
It's a challenge, and I wish I was more prepared here. Well, I think one thing for me that's important is we're always so metric focused, you know, myself, you know, no doubt, but ultimately the human aspect of things is super important. So it's not just the business that we built and the numbers that we achieved, which is something I think about, you know, every day, but it's also who I did it with and how they were uplifted and benefited. I think that's super important to me and to the way we go about business, is that it's all of us doing this together. Everyone who's committed to what we're doing, we're committed to their lives and their happiness. And that's something I'm extremely proud of in our company. So it's like not just what we did, but it's also who did I do it with and how did they benefit?
Yeah, it's great. So that's number one.
Yes.
Okay. What's the next two?
The other one, I think this is maybe a little bit newer lesson for me, is that you don't have to sacrifice your personal life and your health for your professional career. And I think that's something that I see a lot of people doing. I've been the guiltiest of it at so many different times, whether it's not being able to be in a good relationship because it's so secondary to the professional, or sometimes neglecting health because the professional career takes, you know, precedence. And I think that's, it all goes together. I think there's a harmony when all three of those aspects come together, and that's when a healthier, happier life really comes together. When you're healthy, you have great relationships, and you have a thriving professional career, there's no priorities. It's all one. And I think that was, learned that one the hard way.
Right, yeah. It's 12 years of slugging it out, yeah.
Definitely.
Okay, that's number two. And the third truth or lesson?
The third truth or lesson. I think this is somewhat related to the second point, and if this is something that's like I'm trying to put a lot more attention to, is that the hard work and the grind and that effort, there is obviously huge value to that. But at some point, that's not the goal. And actually enjoying it is like, you know, this is a super cliche, but enjoying the work, enjoying everything is more important than achieving it. It's no point of we build a business that's this big or whatever, how many billions of dollars. if I didn't enjoy the process of building it, then it was, you know, rather pointless. And I think, you know, super cliche, but also challenging to really internalize. And that's a personal challenge. I think that's, for me, this year was a very challenging year in terms of like professional challenges. It was a very successful year in terms of the metrics that, you know, the goals that we've achieved. But other aspects, I think I didn't do as good of a job in that I really was a little bit too intense and focused, which detracted from my ability to enjoy it. And looking back, it should have been a more fun year. Looking back, and I really feel like I didn't really, you know, wasn't quite, you know, fully present to really enjoy. What a great year. It was really, I look back and remember the hard work and the struggle, which is important, but it should be mixed in with that enjoyment and fun. So that's the goal this year, is to maintain this intensity, but also enjoy it much, much more. And I think that's something which goes back to the, it's very similar to balancing of everything.
What are you committed to creating then every month to ensure you do that? How are you going to keep yourself accountable on that?
It's the balance. I think it's going, you know, in terms of like prioritizing, ensuring health. And it's also so like working out and eating well, you know, the super fundamental basics, investing more into personal life. I think it's easy for me to just work and not, you know, as a single guy, just not put as much energy to nurture that aspect of life and really make a little bit more better planning. Like I could plan work and like I have plans, you know, that go out many years and things, but like I'm bad about planning like, how am I going to enjoy this weekend? Or can I get my friends together to go on a vacation in 3 months? Those are the things that are always like the best moments. Right? If you look back and those are the things that I type past, those are my favorite times when you're traveling with your friends. But at the same time, I don't even put that much energy to make those moments happen. So I think that's another thing that I'll try to do a lot better.
That's great. That's great, man. Where can we connect with you online personally? Where do you like to hang out?
I'm probably more, you know, Instagram. So at @mmente, you can find me there. Drop by, say hello. I'm always excited to hear from everybody. And of course, if you're into women's clothing and men's clothing, you know, we at revolve.com is, you know, the main business. And actually, we have a designer business, higher end designers, fwrdforward.com as well, where our men's selection there is. Lewis, you got to check it out. That's our men's selection.
fwrd.com is the men's stuff.
It's men's and women's, but the men's selection is real good over there.
It's not on Revolve.
There's some stuff, but Forward is really, you know,
it's got the good stuff. All right. I'm going there and picking up some stuff tonight. Awesome. Well, before I ask the final question, Michael, I want to acknowledge you for everything you've built over the last 15 years and your ability to be aware and recognize the things that you've struggled with. I think there's a lot of people when they build something that big, they lose themselves and they forget to take care of their health and their personal relationships. So for your clarity and awareness around the importance of humans and your team, the importance of humans in your life and your health is a great reminder for all of us. So I want to acknowledge you for that and all you've done to inspire people.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, man.
Thank you for everything. You know, we've all, you know, I have a big group of friends who, you know, we all like to, you know, help each other. And you've done so, you know, your work, you know, the books and the podcast, we've all learned so much from. And I think a lot of that, you know, a lot of the things that, you know, I was mentioning, I feel is because you think about it in a similar way. There's like very few sources where I can be inspired or I can learn about, you know, health, relationships and business. There's a lot of business, but it's treated separately. But I think I've learned so many times from you and from Mike, you know, my own experience is that like the same things that make us weak in our personal life also are the same things that make us weak in our professional life. And I think integrating those lessons learned are things that I've really started to see as I get older versus it's usually compartmentalized. And I think that's, I know I see a lot of that from you and I see that, you know, from the books, I see a lot of the challenges with masks. It's in your personal life. It's in your professional life and different ones. And so it's learned so much from you. So honored and happy to be here.
Thank you so much. Of course. We've got one final question. We'll let you go. And that's, what's your definition of greatness?
I think greatness comes from happiness and happiness comes from making other people happy. And ultimately being your authentic self and appreciating and being happy with the person you are and the life that you have in front of you.
There you go, Michael Mente. Appreciate you.
Thank you, man.
Thanks,
it's been
brother.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
This was great. The movement of greatness is strong, and I continue to be inspired by all the people we bring on here. If you guys are inspired by this episode, let me know. Take a screenshot right now and tag me on your Instagram story at Lewis Howes. The link for this to let your friends know is lewishowes.com/5. 1-800-273-8383. Again, you can share it out on Twitter, on Facebook, Instagram. Just tag me and let me know so I can respond back to you and we can have a conversation over on social media. The full show notes and all the things we covered and talked about, the quotes from Michael, the video is back at lewishouse.com/583. Share it with your friends. We've got to get this message out there. We've got to let other people know that they can have that inspiration, the tools, the strategy to help them grow their business, help them grow and launch their ideas and live a bigger, better life. Again, it means the world to me that you guys continue to show up each and every week to support the School of Greatness. And my only request is that you implement and take action on at least one idea each time to improve your own life, your own business, your health, whatever the subject we're talking about, that you implement it in your life and then you share it with a friend and let them know how it impacted you and how it supported your life. That's how we continue to grow this message, is by you guys taking action, seeing big results, and then letting your friends know. Again, this is a free podcast. So again, thank you for all of your support. And the link is lewishouse.com/583 for all the full show notes, the resources, the talking points, the video interview, all that good stuff. And Doug Ellis said, if your business comes from relationships, then relationships should be your business. I want you to evaluate the relationships in your life. How are you serving people? How are you giving to them? Or are you a one-sided transaction? Are you only looking for things to get out of relationships as opposed to give? Relationships are going to be the key to making this year great for you in your personal life and in your business. It's all about relationships. Everything we do is relationships. So I hope you guys are optimizing the ones you're in and adding new people in your life who can support your vision that you can support as well. I love you so very much. And as always, you know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.
There are any number of reasons you might consider selling your home. To move closer to family, live within a smaller budget, or just wanting a change of scenery. Whatever your reasons, having to figure out all the various housing market trends in your area may not be what you signed up for. That's where an agent who is a Realtor comes in. Realtors have the expertise to help you find the right price and navigate the process to sell your home in a way that's right for you. That's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.